Celebration 25. 25 years of making new friends, of holding hands with Southern California. News, information, and entertainment. Join Celebration 25 with
Bill Jenkins.
Welcome. It's a Saturday night on KABC, and that means that it's open mind from now till midnight. And we're here to open your mind, to give it a little something to think about. Something new, perhaps, or some of you. Something different. But something that we feel is real, or we wouldn't spend our time or yours to talk to you about. Tonight we're going to be dealing very deeply with, basically, the near-death experience. But the near-death experience brings on a whole multitude of other things that are a part of the reality of the world that we live in today. But let's start with the near-death experience. And for that, we have, well, I couldn't think of anybody more qualified to talk to you about it, to get into its ramifications, to get into its history, into its meaning, than Diane Morrissey. She is the regional coordinator for the International Association of Near-Death Studies, which is headquartered in Connecticut, or at Connecticut University. Diane, welcome to Open Mind.
Thank you, Bill.
The near-death experience is not something anymore, I think, that you just hear about every now and then. It seems to be something that's going on all the time.
It happens to many, many people. All over the world, in every continent.
Basically, let's give us a little thumbnail description of what the classic near-death experience is, or can we do that?
We can.
I thought maybe we might be able to.
There are a few things that most people don't encounter, but it basically starts by finding oneself with all consciousness within that self out of one's physical body.
Oh, they're going out of body again.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And noticing first that they see the body, this astral form or spiritual form, whatever, we have many names for it, we're not sure what it's called, and they can experience sometimes actually seeing through themselves and seeing where it is that they have had this near-death experience, the structure around them, their home, the hospital, whatever, and then they pass through a dark place or a tunnel. And after one leaves the tunnel, they sometimes come to a very bright white or golden loving light. And sometimes leave this, they experience a knowingness of all things and feeling very one with the universe and tremendous peace and love beyond anything that is humanly possibly capable of describing. It's fantastic.
All right, now, Diane, you know, I'm sitting here talking to you, and of course, a lot of this, the things that you just told me, we have touched on this show before, but I'm so interested in you being here. This is your first time. You're with a group that has taken onto itself the idea of studying this, shall I use the word, I shouldn't, but I shall for a moment, phenomenon of the near-death experience. I don't think there's anything phenomenal about death. We have to experience that all the time. I think what's phenomenal is the approach that we give death in the Western world. But you talk about the tunnel. You talk about the life, and you talk about the light at the end of the tunnel. The serenity. And that has always impressed me, because it's not just one or two or three people talking.
No, that's true. There's been
hundreds of thousands of people
talking.
Correct. From all walks of life, from all languages, from all cultures, and they don't cross-talk with each other as if they read somebody's book. Now, it impresses me that if you were a scientist at Caltech or at UCLA and you started getting this kind of enormous independent observation of something going on in the universe or in the world from that many people, that all at once that would become a very big scientific thing.
Well, I believe that's why IONS was created, because they provide research material and aid to those who want to study the near-death experience all across the country.
Mm-hmm. What I was trying to get to, Diane, is that there is a transition of the consciousness of the human being, it seems.
Yes.
It makes this transition in a rather consistent way. as consistent as the laboratory experiments that we could conduct at all of our universities if we were dealing with electromagnetics or some other form of science. And with that kind of consistent observation from that many observers, that would in science be said is one of those laws.
Valid.
Valid. But here we live in the Western world where we have to deal now not with reason, but with religion.
True.
And there is a vast difference. And people don't want to believe this, that all of these hundreds of thousands of people are lying, or we're hallucinating,
mm-hmm.
or we're doing all of these things.
Well, times are changing because there are definitely a lot more believers now than there ever have been.
Well, the facts of the matter are the facts of the matter.
Right, because some of the scientists themselves are having near-death experiences.
Yes, indeed. Isn't that interesting? Doctors who have to listen to the patients telling them what the doctors were saying while they were operating on them.
Correct. Which would be impossible if one is supposedly totally unconscious and not aware of his surroundings.
Are doctors finding out that people are not unconscious necessarily?
Even in the comatose state, people are able to report back who came to the room, what was said, how many times they came in the room, and the discussions that took place with the doctors. So there may be a similarity here between that, or there may not be. It's hard to know.
Isn't it curious? You know, how long are we going to say, isn't it curious that this could happen?
For sure.
It happens time and time and time and time again, and all the doctors seem to want to do is to say, well, isn't it curious?
Correct.
How about finding out about what's going on there?
Well, now there's enough groups. IANS has members in every continent in the world,
mm-hmm.
with the exception of the Antarctic. And
well, population down there,
yeah.
last count was, what, 7?
Right.
Okay, so you missed one of those people.
Right. But there is a major interest now forming across all lands because people look and seek for reasons why this experience may have happened to them. Why did it pick them if indeed there is a choice involved here? And sometimes in coming back, they wonder if they weren't crazy or is it a moment of insanity or whatever, because if it doesn't fit into their prior belief system, they have a hard time coping and or explaining the experience to other people later.
You know, we call it the reality box around here.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has a reality box.
True.
And that reality box is shaped by both your living experiences.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good reason. Are the living experiences of people whom you trust and have great confidence in, your education, your religions, a lot of things shape your reality box. The problem with that reality box is that we so jealously guard it. Because if anyone were to give us information that's outside of that reality box,
we think they're wrong.
We immediately say, no, you're lying. You're trying to deceive me.
That's
oh, you're
right.
crazy. Or some other thing. And even if it is the perception of our own senses, like ourselves having a near-death experience, we immediately, instantaneously say, well, maybe I better go see this rank. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm going over the deep end, or I was hallucinating. That's how jealously we guard the parameters of that reality box, which indeed is the window through which we can view reality.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but for most people, it isn't a window at all, Diane. It is a people.
That's true. It's very real.
And what we're trying to do is to expand your reality box. And we want to try to expand yours tonight about what happens when we transcend from physical life to another life.
The other side.
The other side. Do we go to heaven or hell? Is it fire and brimstone, or is it something else altogether? It is my belief, and I'm now expressing my belief, that there is no such thing as heaven or hell or fire and brimstone. And that may be a little bit shocking to you, me being at one time a Church of Christ preacher. But I think we can distribute that and show you that tonight and give you some very good reasons for thinking about that tonight. If you're going to tell me it's brimstone and fire and hell and heaven, the only data that you have is a book that was written thousands of years ago by mystics.
I'm sure
we have something else to talk to you about tonight.
At one time in my life, I might have believed that. And in 1977, I had a near-death experience, which changed my entire life.
I want to get into that. what caused you to get into this extremely fascinating subject, because it dovetails into so many of the things that are happening in the world around us right
now.
We have to learn that there is a great correlation between physical life and spiritual life. There is an obligation that goes back and forth between this. We are now having little windows between the two, and we want to discuss those windows with you. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. Further, I have this little feeling than just people who pass through this little ebb called near death, doesn't it?
Yes. It's a major endeavor looking beyond the consciousness.
It really has a great deal to do with the way we are and what we think and how we view the world.
Right.
How did you get involved in this and why?
I was getting ready to have a party in my home and...
You didn't invite me.
That's true, but I didn't know you then.
True.
Anyway, I noticed that the fish tank had started to leak, and I leaned over to pick up the tubing, and as I did, the curlers in my hair bumped the edge of the aquarium, and the water from the tank coming out of the tubing squirted in my mouth, which was backing up through the pump.
The water from...
It's very hard to explain.
You got fish water in your mouth.
Yes, which was backing up through the pump prior to this without my knowledge, and so I was electrocuted by the water from the tank.
Zapped by the old fish tank.
Yes, and I found myself standing out of my body. I was totally aware that everything I think and feel with was now standing, looking down at my physical body.
You do that too.
Yes.
What am I going to do with you people?
Well, maybe help get you out tonight.
Okay.
And during that experience, I went through several tunnels, not just one.
That's interesting. I've never heard about several tunnels.
Oh, not
one
just
I've
one.
Heard about, but...
Not just one, several. Several times, maybe it was the same tunnel. I have a hard time knowing, but I entered through the tunnel, went through it, and I came back in the house and walked around for some time, and then I would go through the tunnel again. And I met a woman on the other side.
Let me get the picture. You had the incident with the fish tank.
True.
Which was physically traumatic to you.
I was electrocuted.
You were electrocuted. You were in a little bit of physical trouble.
True.
Went down the tunnel. Why didn't you go all the way through the tunnel the first time?
I can't answer that. I don't know.
You don't know. But you came back in the out-of-body state... And now you're walking through the house.
I spent much time looking through the house. The first reaction, I wanted to save the physical body. And I walked over...
Where was the physical body during this time?
Laying right below me.
Below the fish tanker, I presume.
Yes, close to it.
Now you're walking around the house, though.
Correct. I walked around for some time, and I...
Through the walls and through the doors
through,
and windows?
Through the walls. The very first wall that I passed through was to get to the telephone to call for help.
You didn't want to take a shortcut and go through a door, as you did.
No.
Went through the walls.
It wasn't even something I thought of. I reached out to call on the phone, and as I did, I extended my right hand, put it on the receiver, and went to grasp the receiver and realized that my hand went through the telephone. I actually looked at my right hand for blood, and when there wasn't any, I guess I did this, to the best recollection, is because I thought, well, I must be bleeding if I pass through something.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that had happened. I looked at my hand, and the best way I can tell you is to just give you an exclamatory remark about it. I looked at the hand and simply went, like, how about that? But I wasn't amazed. I wasn't awed. I was curious is the best way I could explain it. But it was like something that has happened to me every day of my life, but this was the first time that I saw it.
Well, let me ask you, had you ever read about, thought about, discussed in any way this phenomena that we would talk about as the out-of-body experience before
my
then?
My prior belief system was so definitely against everything in the paranormal field, not just... I didn't even know what an out-of-body was, so I can't even tell you that it's not just out-of-body, because I had no idea what a near-death experience was or an out-of-body. I had never had them.
I'm like you. I'd never heard about it until this show.
So until that event, I was totally aware that I was out of my body, but I didn't know that it was called an out-of-body experience when I returned. I simply knew that I was walking around in my home and my body was below me. When I was taken to the emergency later, the doctors and the emergency ward actually asked me, he says, did you see your body from above?
The doctors asked you that?
Yes. And I said, Why, yes, but inside I'm thinking, how could he know that? I haven't told him that I could see my body from above. So he knew, because the paramedics were there, that I was dead for a time, and they couldn't revive me, and it ended up I woke up on my own. But that is the time that I had that near-death experience.
Have you found, let me progress with you just a little bit.
Okay.
I presume that you have attempted to talk to doctors and paramedics and people who are first on the scene, let's say, to those who are in this, out of this strange thing that happens to most. Are they beginning to talk about it more?
They are, and I would say it could even be 50-50 in the medical field and the scientific field. There's hardly anything written negatively about the near-death experience because people really can't dispute it, because what's happened is they'll try to do that, but how can they fight with someone who says, hey, this is what happened, it's real, and I can't explain it?
You almost have to look at a person who has gone through this and can, as it happens so many, many times, say, in the out-of-body state, this is what I experienced. This is what you said. This is what happened.
Right.
And when their recollection of that is accurate, we have to call that empirical evidence.
It is, to a sort, and it's hard to explain.
It's as empirical an evidence, in my mind, as it would be if it were somebody who was in the physical at all times.
Mm-hmm. There's many things that happened to me during that experience that I still don't understand, that I still have no English words for in any dictionary to describe what I felt, because it is beyond that.
You want to try Spanish?
Wouldn't help. I just don't think so.
You want to try just trying to impart a burst of feeling and thought?
It was the most fantastic thing that's ever happened to me.
You were in the near-death experience, and in fact, clinically, you were dead.
For about 23 minutes.
Were you ever bothered by this?
The very first day out of the hospital, I started trying to find out what had happened. And
I think I would want to, too.
I couldn't understand it. It didn't make any sense in the college background I'd had or anything in my religion. Nothing could give me an answer as to what had happened. And the doctors didn't use the term near-death experience. They just said that I was dead for a time. That's all.
You know why they didn't?
Because maybe they didn't know then.
No, it wasn't in their little books.
Oh. No, some doctors, I do believe now, are extremely open about the experience. I mean, the first and foremost, Raymond Moody, and mm-hmm. wrote the book Life After Life. And that's very important because he certainly was aware that many of the patients in that hospital had the same experience.
You know, it's interesting to me that there have been books after books. There has been research. There has been documented cases. Thousands of them. I guess hundreds of thousands of them, Diane. Right?
8 million. Just adults.
Just eight million. I like that figure.
1982?
So now we have these people who are making these reports. Let's call them that. These empirical reports. But yet we have those that sit in the medical profession and the psychiatric profession. It is not in their books, and therefore it isn't so. These people were all either lying or hallucinating, which is basically the point that our establishment, medical and psychiatric community comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And they really need to get off their high horse.
Can I talk about a newspaper review? Is that okay on the air?
You certainly may, but you can do that after I talk about something else here.
Okay.
We're going to do something. I'm with Diane Morrissey tonight, and I'm on your side, Diane.
Terrific.
We're talking about the near-death experience. I'm delighted that Diane is here because I think a great change in her life happened when she indeed experienced the near-death experience. And from that point on, she wanted to find out more about it. She's now the regional coordinator for the International Association of Near-Death Studies. That should give you a clue right there that it happens so much to so many people around the world that there is an international organization to find out more about the significant meaning of what this is to us in our physical life, because there are great lessons to be learned there. We see personalities totally changed because of that. Why do they change? What do you find out?
I know I certainly did. And I've met at least 10 people who've had near-death experiences, some very significant ones, some very small ones. Yet the personality, the person changes so much after the experience. But that's what more IANS is about, to study even the after effects and to understand how these transpersonal transformations of the physical body take place, because they seem to want to reach out more to help other people, to get spiritually involved with the universe in some specific manner, not a general one, and help other people.
Does it have anything to do with... No, I'm not trying to be flippant with you at all, or metaphysical in any way, but life's mission.
Oh, I'm sure it does. That's my personal belief. I don't think it's an accident that these people who've had near-death experiences, that many of them experience psychic phenomena starting to happen to them when this has never, ever happened to them. They don't discuss it. It is, you know, for some people, considered satanic prior to this, mm-hmm. and suddenly start having, not a tremendous amount, but for some, many people have psychic experiences after the NDE.
You know, I'm kind of glad you mentioned that, because we do get into this subject quite often on these Saturday nights together. Quite often, I spend hours on the telephone and certainly get an enormous amount of mail from people who are very, very sincere in their beliefs. It's their belief structure that this is satanic stuff. They will cite me, you know, various readings from the Bible to try to support their belief system. But I really think it's time to get away from the mysticism of it, and we have to look at the Bible as a mystic writing as much as anything else.
I think it's real, and
I'm different
than the Kabbalistic material or the Tao or the Zen or the Buddhist.
Well, don't get me wrong. I have enormous respect for the great intelligence and the great guidelines that are given in the Bible, and not only the majesty of it, but the mathematical symmetry of it. It could not be achieved today. So certainly it came from forces greater than ourselves. So I'm not really putting down the Bible.
I'm
putting down what we sometimes read in what it has to say. But we're now dealing with things that are not mystic. We're dealing with empirical reporting. If it was just by 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 1,000 people, okay, so everybody, you know, was drinking the same brew 102. But this isn't the case.
No, it isn't.
We're dealing with people from all walks of life, from all cultures, from all religions, and quite often what they have experienced totally violates their closely held belief system. So we're dealing with something that's very serious, and out of this now is something to be learned by us. Particularly in the United States, when we think about the near-death experience, we think about the awesome fear that the Western culture in particular, the Judeo-Christian culture, has developed about this thing called death.
Mm-hmm. I think we're afraid to talk about it here.
The world.
And it's the most fantastic thing that can happen to anyone.
Now we have to start talking about people who have nearly done it.
Correct.
That have literally left their body. And have experienced... I've never heard anyone tell me, and not that it hasn't happened, that this was a terrible experience.
A few have, but it's so extremely rare, the majority.
But I tell you what... I've never found a person who knows that they are in a near-death state. They're terminally ill, they have been hurt, or they have grown old, that they are not gripped by panic. Which, of course, brings on the death even faster, I think.
It's hard to say.
Yeah. So, are we going to deal with fact or fiction?
Well,
are we
going to
deal with reality or mysticism? So we've put a couple of things on the table for you to talk about tonight. And I want you to talk to Diane Morrissey about them, if you will, because she certainly knows a great deal more about this. She's involved with an international organization that has studied it. And you're not trying to develop any kind of hypotheses necessarily, but you're trying to look into the facts of the matter. What is being said? What is being done? And what is there for each and every one of us to learn from that. Diane, are you ready to go to the phone?
I'm ready.
Well, tonight our computer has gone out of body. I've gone somewhere. So we're just going to have to trust that this person will understand that you're on without me knowing who you are. Hi. Give your first name first, and please get into the question.
This is Fred, and I would direct this question to Diane.
Fine.
She belongs to an organization, and I was wondering, is there a chapter of this organization in L.A.?
Yes, matter of fact, as regional coordinator, we'll be setting up Friends of IONS, which will start December 7th on a Saturday morning from 10 to 11 in the Santa Fe Springs City Library. And there are seats for 100, and we urge anyone who's had a near-death experience or an event very close to this to come and share their experience and or just listen so that they can feel better about this. And we will meet every first Saturday of the month thereafter.
At the Santa Fe Springs Library?
Correct.
Okay. And I was wondering, do you know if like science has been able to duplicate this?
Well,
they can zap somebody with 40,000 watts, I guess.
Well, if they have the technology like to bring the body into like a near-death state and they could...
Well, let me share. Under hypnosis, three people have requested, as I did, to... Dr. Moss, I mentioned when I first met her, and also Dr. Kenneth Ring, that I'd like to be taken back under hypnosis and share verbally maybe anything that I forgot and didn't remember from that marvelous experience. And in the three people that they have tried to do this with, not necessarily Dr. Moss or Dr. Ring, they discovered that these people went into cardiac arrest during hypnosis, because in order to go back to remember, you have to remember that you died. So the heart stops. So they really don't want to fool around with trying to take us back again.
Still don't know yet.
You got to remember the body, the mind is a servo mechanism. And you give it instructions powerfully enough, it will serve those instructions.
Well, isn't there any organizations out there that deal with out-of-body projections, like I guess Eckhart Carr would be one?
Right, and there's also Bob Monroe and Jerry Gross, and
yes, indeed.
We get into that in some of my classes here in Southern California as well.
Those are all pretty good. They're not just a bunch of kooks out there?
No.
Frankly, I know I'm real.
Well, besides yourself.
Now, whenever you start dealing with people like Robert Monroe of the Monroe Institute of Applied Sciences, where the here they get more into the study and the utilization of the out-of-body experience under the most carefully controlled laboratory experiences that you can have, we're not dealing with kooks. We're dealing with a whole systems of doctors of psychiatry and psychology, along with Mr. Monroe and the rest of them. With Jerry Gross and Jim Vogt up in St. Paul, Minnesota, you're dealing with people that perhaps don't have that scientific approach that they have, and they don't have the great laboratories and the Faraday cages, but they have people who are very careful in what they're doing and what they're learning and then putting that down for all of us to absorb.
The Monroe Institute has a Faraday cage?
Oh, yes, indeed.
All right,
There are a number of ways that they want to make sure that whenever you're going to go into the out-of-body state, remember your physical body stays here.
Right.
And they want to monitor it very carefully. They want to shield it from any kind of outside influences, which, of course, the Faraday cage can do. They will also use the suspension tanks with the salt water and all other things to make sure that you are in a true altered state of consciousness, not in any way affected by anything else, so that what you have to share in the experiences, which are very personal, because you can't get a monitor up there and watch what you're doing.
Right. So you would say the Monroe would be a good one to play around with?
I certainly wouldn't suggest playing around with what they have to do. It's very serious.
Well, it's under serious conditions. I shouldn't have used those terms.
Right. I think that perhaps that's one of the leading institutions right now dealing with that.
I see. Okay, well, I guess that's about it for me.
All right. Thank you very much for sharing that with us. We'll be back to our callers in just a moment. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. We're talking about, basically, if we were to give it a name, the near-death experience, but that certainly just laps greatly into the out-of-body experience, which is a fascinating thing. I hope you want to read the next issue of Let's Talk magazine, because we will go quite deeply into the out-of-body experience and its meaning to you and me as we see it from this point of view. Diane is with the The International Association of Near-Death Studies, that's located in at Connecticut University. She's the regional director. She has been there and has dealt with how many hundreds who have been there, too. So let's go back to the phones. Hello. Who are we talking to here?
My name is Maria.
Hello, Maria.
Good evening, Bill and Diane. You're so interesting, and I understand exactly what you must have done.
The Hoosier. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, Herb Shriner.
Herb Shriner,
well,
sure.
As a child, I was in show business and a dancer, and I was dancing all around Chicago, and I happened to meet Herb, and he was trying to get a start in show business, which Kate Smith gave him at a later date. But in the beginning of his career, why, I always knew what was going to happen to him ahead of time. And I would call him up on the phone.
Person, you, Maria.
Huh?
You're just exercising a little psychic precognition there, aren't you?
Oh, yes. It was so strong. In fact, I was the one once in New York when he was with Steve Allen. I said, I saw you last night putting an Alka-Seltzer in a glass. And he says, that's so funny because I'm going for an audition tomorrow. And the next day he got the Alka-Seltzer show. And then I knew about him going to Australia and all these different things that happened. But in the meantime, when I was dancing and he was trying to get his start, why, I knew when his mother passed away, and I knew when he was married that his wife was going to have twins. I called her and told her, and she says, that's impossible.
Did you have a fixation on anybody other than Herb Shriner?
Yes. I was with Frank Sinatra's mother in the plane when it crashed.
You were with her?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was, I tried to reach, that's a different story, though.
I know, but she was such a delightful lady.
Oh, she was a wonderful lady, and he is, too. But anyway, I just...
He wasn't a lady, but...
I mean, he's a wonderful man.
Oh, yeah, he is.
And I saw him at the beginning of his career, too. And, but anyway, it was really strange. We stayed friends all those years, and then they came out to look some property in the valley because he had a great idea to go up on top of the mountain out here and make a helicopter stop, which was way ahead of people's thinking, you know. And the last time we were together, we're standing on top of that mountain, and I said, well, I hope you and Dixie come back to California. They were going to Florida to live. And he said, you know, I've always wanted you to meet this dancer that lives out here, too. She's something like you are, and we've always been friends, too. And he says, I hope when I come back to California, we can arrange a meeting. Well, then it was just after that Herb Shriner and his wife were down in Florida. And I was living in a little house in the valley, and I was having a garage sale. And I was listening to the radio when I was painting.
My wife probably went to your garage sale.
Probably. It was over on LaBelle Street in Woodland Hills.
Does it make any difference where it is?
Yeah. And anyway, I was sitting looking out the window at my patio and listening to the radio, and I was just painting away at an oil painting because I loved oil paint backstage. And I looked at my painting and I said, this is crazy. I'm painting palm trees. And to me, they were very dull and uninteresting. But I painted this one palm tree. And just then on the radio, they said, they gave me the news that Herb Shriner and his wife were in one of his little collector cars, and they'd hit a tree, a palm tree. And anyway, my painting was a psychic painting.
Right where it was happening, yeah?
Yes. So I immediately got on the telephone. While I'm on the telephone, trying to call to find out what I could, talk to his mother-in-law, and they said they'd call me back. Well, a girl came to my door. And she knocked on the door and she said, I'm looking at your piano bench. And she says, it's your garage sale. I said, yes. And I said, were you in show business? And she said, yes. And I said, I just heard a terrible thing. And she says, so did I. I was in my car. We both started crying. And the girl that came to my door was this girl that Herb Shriner always wanted me to meet.
Probably not a coincidence.
Nothing really is a coincidence.
Now, this has been my dearest friend now. Ever since the day that happened, and we're very close.
Maria, in dealing with all of this, has something different come to you in terms of information which has affected the way you live?
Yes.
Could you put it into a thumbnail sketch for me here? Because I have a thumbnail commercial. So
several times, why they've come to me, and they take me out of body. They come and get me.
Now, you say they. Who are we talking about?
Herb Shriner and his wife. They were very much in love, and they were very close together.
Now, let me stop you for just a second, Maria.
Yes.
And I find that to be quite fascinating. I have a question that I want to put to Diane and to you, too, Maria, but I want to take a pause, and we'll get back to it right after that.
Yes.
Are you really experiencing Herb Schreiner and his wife?
Yes.
Or is it possible that the memory of Herb is so very, very strong?
No, because it...
Well, don't answer me now, because I got to stop for a second.
Okay.
But I want you to answer that when I get right back, okay?
Yes.
The reason I ask that is because I think there are a lot of people asking that same question, and I want you to address that, if you will. Okay?
I will.
All right. We're all going to have to deal with it one time or another. And to help us deal with that is Diane Morrissey of the International Association of Near-Death Studies. And Maria is talking to us. Now, Maria, I put a question to you.
Yes.
You have this very, very strong feeling that you are having a visitation, as it were.
Yes.
From a dear friend of yours, who is Herb Schreiner, who was really one of our fine, fine entertainers. I remember him deeply back in the 50s and enjoyed him so very, very much. And I ask you, was that your imagination, or do you think that that's exactly what's happening to you? And I'd like to have your response, and then I would also want Diane to add an overlay on what you would have to say based upon the information that they have at the near-death studies.
Well, the reason that I know that it's really happening is it happens when I'm deep asleep, and usually... See, I had a minor accident where I was, part of my sight was taken away. But when this happens to me, why, I go through the same thing that Diane was talking about. I try to wake myself up at first, and I can't.
So you feel like you can't move the physical body?
Yes.
And this is because... We believe, and it's only because I've had this happen to myself that I understand this a little more.
Uh-huh.
It's not a near-death experience, but one can also be out of body and not have a near-death experience.
Uh-huh.
And during that out of body, when you're half in the physical and half out, you experience that paralysis of that catatonic state to the physical body where you can't open your eyes, you can't talk, you can't move your hands or feet.
Uh-huh. Well, I go through these... beautiful mountain area, and then there's a just like sunlight over the top of the mountain,
mm-hmm.
but it lowers gradually, and as it lowers there seems to be some water at one side of it, and that's where Herb Schreiner's wife and him always meet me, and they've grown older in the times that they meet me.
Quick question for you, Diane, because Maria, there's our music, which means we have to take a break for the news. You're perfectly welcome to stay on, and we'll pick up this conversation.
I'd love to.
Does what she say ring true, Diane?
Well, some people have seen apparitions, and that's a common experience.
Let's get back to this in just a moment. We're talking about the near-death experience that overlays the out-of-body experience. We'll discuss it all till the next time. And, of course, whenever you start talking about the experiences that people have near-death, we get into this other... strange blending of the physical and the spiritual world in which we live in. And that blending seems to be going on more and more in just daily life.
There's been a great correlation between people who've had the near-death experience, and it makes no difference what religious background they have, what beliefs they've had in the past. The same sort of experience happens to those people, i.e. seeing the tunnel and the white light. Sometimes a sound in the head, feeling tremendous peace that they've never felt, and overwhelming love, and possibly meeting a loved one or a friend on the other side, a deceased relative, or someone they don't recall that they've ever known.
Something that makes you comfortable anyway, right?
It's marvelous.
Not that we're recommending to everybody go out there and bring this on, because that gets into be another story. We have to be careful. Maria, I want you to, wind up what you were talking about.
Oh, anyway, when I get to Herb Schreiner and his wife, they've grown older now, age with time, and they haven't come to me. I haven't done this now in about 2.5 years. But the last time that I visited, we'll say, why it, at the end of the time, when they led me back to this road, it was a road the mountains made a shadow over the top of it, like. And when they led me back, Herb Schreiner said, "You must get back. You must leave right now." And he said, "You have to take care of your blood." 2 days after that, I went to a doctor. The doctor said to me, "My goodness, Maria, you should have come to me, because I don't take pills, I don't drink, I don't do any of those things." I said,
"What do you do, Maria?"
"Oh, right now I'm in the midst of, I'm thinking of writing a book."
"Great."
"Anyway, so when we started through this tunnel, he said about me going to the doctor, and I did. And here my blood pressure was at a peak that I could have had a heart attack. And they gave me medicine for it, and I still take my high blood pressure medicine now. But since that time, they didn't come back to me anymore. While I was visiting with them, though, I could look back through this tunnel, and I saw the house where I lived, not the bed I was laying in. And I was standing by the door. And I said, 'Now go back.' And they took me back."
I want to thank you for sharing that with us, Maria.
And the most interesting part of it is, it must have been a great warning to me of some kind. Now, I get no, but they don't follow me around spiritually, but I am very psychic about people I don't even know. I don't want to get these things. And sometimes I'm standing in a room and just I'll go to turn around or something, and something will say, "Well, you know, so-and-so is going to do such and such."
But, Maria, those things are happening to you for a reason. And I do believe that nothing can happen to a person that they're not spiritually, adequately, intelligently enough aware to handle. Things can only happen to you that you're ready to have happen to you. Try not to ask why those events are taking place in your life, but ask, how can I use it, or how can I make my life better by having this experience?
Now, you know, I am personally...
That's probably the reason I can't go out of body, Maria.
Well,
I'm not ready for it.
Right.
Okay.
And I don't think that you will be for a long time.
That's what I've been told.
Do you have a child, a little girl?
No, they're all grown children now.
Do they have children?
One of them does, yes.
A little girl?
Well, the oldest girl.
Yeah, she's a brilliant girl. I see something beautiful in her life.
Well, they all have beautiful things in their life. I wouldn't...
Well,
relegate them as beautiful, as brilliant, but never they, maybe they are. But you know how daddies are.
Yes, but she's going to do something very exceptional.
I hope so.
She will. Anyway, you know, the one
Maria,
thing...
Maria, I need to get on to the other
callers. I know, it's a shame, darn it. But I'm partially blinded, and everybody's amazed. I cook, I use none, I sew, I do everything myself.
Wonderful.
And I must have some spiritual guidance.
I bet you do.
I do, dear.
All right, sweetie.
I love you, Bill, and I listen to your show every Saturday. I wouldn't miss it.
That makes you a super special person.
And the man with the crystal, Herb Schreiner, said that he needs to put it up higher or float it. Something about floating it.
Interesting, because that's exactly what he's doing.
Okay.
All right.
Good night, dear. And Diane, I do hope I have the pleasure of meeting you someday.
Thank you. I hope you will.
I wish I had some way to have these meetings in the valley.
You have some meetings coming up, Diane, where they can meet you here in the not-too-distant future?
Well, just in Santa Fe Springs, and they can write me, Diane Morrissey, Post Office Box 4241, Santa Fe Springs, California, 90670, and I'll be happy to send them information on our meetings and where they are and also on my classes.
Oh, good. All right. Thank you, sweetheart.
Thank you, Maria.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate your call. We're 13 minutes past the 10 o'clock mark on a Saturday night. You know, a lot of people have expressed concern here. Maybe you can help us. If you're going to go out of body, whether it's in the near-death experience, you don't have too much choice about this thing.
That's for sure.
You're there.
Suddenly out.
Like it or not. In fact, some people have this, I guess we would call it a near-death experience, just seconds before what is obviously a horrible crash that they were going to be in on the automobile. They actually pop out of the car and watch it all go on.
That's true.
and, you know, watch them work over their bodies and things like that.
And then wonder why everybody's so worried.
Yeah, what's the big
because
deal?
They feel so calm about it.
Yeah, like, hey, I'm okay.
I'm okay.
Everything's okay. Truck missed me. Really did do a number on the car. And come to think of it, my body down there, but I'm all right. I'm not trying to be flippant, but it really does. It really does happen. Is there any reason? We hear reasons. You know, a lot of people have some ideas that, let us call them metaphysical or let us call them mystic, that you have to be very careful if you're going to take these little journeys out of the body. What have you found in the work that you've been doing?
Well, please understand that this comes from my beliefs and knowledge of the experience, having had first and only a near-death experience in 77, never previously experiencing either an out-of-body or near-death experience prior to that. And about 2 months after the event, I was just relaxing at home and thinking about someone I cared a great deal for, and suddenly found myself in the middle of this person's apartment and saw everything quite clearly.
I hope it was okay that you got there then at that time.
Yes, it was, and I found that when I called this person, when I was back in my body, that everything was exactly like I had seen it. And I said to myself, my goodness, can someone actually be out of their body and not be dead?
Were you being a peeping Tom?
No, I don't believe it's possible to astrally project or be out of one's body and travel to an area that you are not spiritually allowed to see. I do believe there's some kind of force that controls what you can see and what you can't see.
Or at least your memory of it.
Correct.
Because you now are treading in private territory.
And that could be true for some people.
Because otherwise they would just tear the walls down on all houses and we'd just all live in stilts, you know. It wouldn't.
That's right.
It wouldn't really make any difference. What are some of the more burning questions? Are the questions that, in your experience, as you talk to people and deal with them on this, that seem to be on their mind more than any other?
Well, they have a hard time with the experience because so many people around them, having not had a near-death experience, they treat the experience with one of skepticism, and that's unfortunate. The best thing that a person can do, who is a friend of a person who's had a near-death experience, is simply just listen to them and offer no help as to what it was or maybe how it happened or why, because I don't think we know that.
You certainly don't want to offer to get on the threshold of death yourself in order to be able to communicate with them.
That's correct. It's interesting that some people who have tried to commit suicide and been brought back by the paramedics have experienced negative near-death experiences, been forced to see the future in a couple of instances of people I've met, and see what their life would have been like had they lived, and now the unborn children that they would have created, instead of the past life review, looking backwards for a person who hasn't committed suicide.
You hear that happening all the time. Is that pretty consistent, a review of your life?
Oh, for sure. This is really common, and it happens. You can't even say in a second, because there's absolutely no time on the other side for those people who do experience the near-death experience. They see their whole life pass before them, all in chronological order, but all in the same moment. And it's a very hard concept.
I'm not sure if I want to look at all that again.
You not only look at it, but for myself, I felt it all again. Everything. Everything I said and thought to another person and did physically, every step that I took in my life, I retook on the other side instantly.
Did you learn from that?
I did. Things that
make Diane Morrissey a better person?
Oh, I think so. There's a great concern now for me, inside of me, for everyone, where before it was extremely opinionated. My belief was that only I was right, that no one else could be.
Well, is there something wrong with that?
Well, I just...
It seems to me like that's the way everybody is.
I share...
Sort of the norm.
I share a philosophy in my class, and at the end of the beginning class, it is, if you're so sure you're absolutely positively right, you're probably wrong. And that's how I try to live every day.
Boy, do I like that.
Isn't that good?
That makes a lot of sense to me. And we have a lot of sense to talk to you about till midnight tonight with Diane Morrissey. We're talking about the near-death experience. And I'm curious. I would love to hear from from you and, you know, give us a call here. I've never given the numbers, and the phone line is full, so it may take a moment. But I would like to talk to you if you have had this experience yourself and have never talked about it because you thought everybody would think you were wingo. Understand that 8 million people are talking about it now.
More than that. That's 1982 Gallup poll.
Oh, that's a 1982.
And those are just adults.
So you're not alone. And it does happen, and I suppose that it's a terribly normal thing. And for those who haven't had an opportunity to get in, you may get a busy signal right now, but keep on trying because we would like to talk to you. In Los Angeles, 520-TALK. San Fernando is a bit traumatic. I mean, some of us have to have great drama to do great things, I suppose.
I truly believe that a near-death experience is not an out-of-body experience, because when one is in a near-death experience, some can even be totally aware that the physical body is indeed dead. And that did happen to me. I was totally aware that I had a choice to make, that I could stay dead or actually come back to the physical body. And most people who have near-death experiences come to this precipice or boundary or at the end of the light where they have to make a decision, or the decision is made for them. And they'll meet a past relative and they'll say, hey, you have to go back, you haven't finished. Or they'll just hear a voice, you haven't finished.
No copping out, in other words.
No.
Your time is done.
A big choice.
I need to get to a few little things here, but you just brought something up to my mind that the out-of-body travelers, or they call them explorers at the Monroe Institute, have found in their sojourns as they run across others over there who are deeply concerned about them and their health. And in one particular case, the gentleman was a physicist who worked closely with the Monroe Institute. He was due to go in for some major surgery. I mean, life-threatening surgery. He was going. And the healing happened. And the surgery was never necessary, almost as if it happened from the spiritual side to the physical side. Have you seen that happening before?
Yes. And for me, I had a major problem with arthritic spurs and wore braces on my legs for 28 years. And I got up and walked away from that experience. You cannot have a near-death experience happen to you without it changing your life.
Well, you certainly don't walk with braces now, and you don't seem to have a bit of trouble.
No, I wear heels 8 hours a day.
As at the news break, we run down to the coffee pot, you know. You're going pretty good, Diane. I'll be right back. Diane Morrissey, Death Studies. We were getting into the conversation. Of course, it's kind of a freewheeling night here. A lot of people have great concerns about if they leave their body that they are now in a terribly vulnerable position physically, or that their body can be taken over by others in the out-of-body state. Have you found anything to support that particular contention, which I think comes from a metaphysical point of view and maybe from someone's experiences on the other side? Have you got anything to shore that up or say, we're not sure about that?
Everybody that's a member of IANS that has written in about their near-death experience have all come back.
And no one was trying to take over their body from them, huh?
And it is not like an out-of-body experience, but when there are these people that have out-of-bodies and they feel as if a presence or an entity or a spirit, another spirit, is trying to get into the body, that just simply can't happen. And that event has tried to take place with me. In other words, another spirit has tried, and I've been aware of that, and the hands have been on the body or whatever. But I always manage somehow to get back in and be okay.
It's your body.
That's right, and nobody can have it but the person who's hooked to it.
Well, some of the people who are into this will talk to me about the silver cord.
Right.
Now, I don't know whether that is some sort of a symbolic thing that has been taught to them or whether they are aware of such a thing, and that certainly describes it very well. What about you?
One of the major reasons why I thought I was crazy, no one in my 4 years of college or my religious background had ever told me that this part of you that leaves the body is attached by this cord to the physical. And during the near-death experience, I had this inclination to turn around and look behind me. And as I did, I saw this piece of silver stuff coming out of me. I can't tell you exactly where. I'm not sure. And it went on the floor and went through two walls. And I wanted to see where it was hooked, and it was hooked to Diane Morrissey, the physical body in the den that was lying on the floor. When I woke, I had shared that with just a couple of people because it was so different, so unusual. I just couldn't explain it or understand it. And when I first shared that with Dr. Moss, and she shared with me that that has happened to many people, that people, while they're in near-death experiences, sometimes see this. And she asked me what it looked like, and I said, well, the best way I could describe it was it looked like a piece of tinsel that you hang on a Christmas tree, only it was much wider. It was about 3/4 of an inch across in diameter. And I have only seen this a couple of other times while out of body, but that was major for me. I now know I'm hooked to that all the time.
Well, some of the out-of-body travelers we've talked to go great distances, and by great distances, I mean to the galaxy, the edge of the galaxy, and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be enough cord there, then, to hold
it. There is. I was totally aware in one experience that I was on Uranus, and I met the people there and spoke with them.
What level did they live on?
The
physical level or one of the astral levels?
Well, they were in an astral body, and they didn't look like me, and I knew that was real. And people who ask, is it a hallucination or is an out-of-body experience real? The best way is for that person to have one. They'll never again wonder, because once you have one, you absolutely know that it's
kind of comes home to roost,
real.
Doesn't it? No matter what they have written, no matter what the sages have said, you have experienced something else. And when we deal about the near-death experience or the out-of-body experience, and not just a few other people, millions and millions of other people, and it really is something to be reckoned with. Let's reckon right now with another caller, and I don't have your name. What's your first name, please?
Vicky.
Hi, Vicky.
How are you, Bill? I love you.
Thank you. I love you, too.
And I'm pleased that you have Diane on tonight. I've had my out-of-body experience, but not a near-death experience, but in my dream, I was killed, and I felt my soul or whatever spirit coming out, like tearing, you know, onion skin,
mm-hmm.
when you peel onions, that tearing sound.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking down,
that's
and my body...
tears falling off my cheek when I do that.
Pardon me?
No, it's okay.
And I was looking down. This man tried to protect me. A man shot me, and this other stranger had jumped and tried to save me, but he was killed also. But I didn't see his spirit. But I felt my body coming up and tearing, and I'm looking down, and I see these two people. And then a crowd comes, and I was trying to tell these people, please help him, because he was trying to save me, you know. Please get him to the hospital quick, you know. And no one was paying any attention to me, and I was very frustrated. And then this strange woman came to me, and no one I knew, and she took my wedding ring, and she said, this doesn't belong to you. You stole it from her. And she's pointing to me, but I'm dead, you know. I knew I was there was something wrong, but I didn't feel dead. And my husband and I now came and he says, yes, these were my wife's rings. And I'm saying, Clifford, his name is Clifford. I said, Clifford, I'm here, I'm okay. But he didn't see me. Nobody saw me. It was terribly frustrating. And I woke up so scared. At first I thought, oh, maybe I am dead. But I woke my husband up and he said, no, you're still living. And it was just so scary. But then I remember being with these other people in a car, and I didn't know them, and I was trying to make small talk, talking to them, and they were just like looking at me like I felt like I was in a different time or a different place, because nothing I said to them made any sense. And the stares that I got from them, I felt so, you know, weird, like I couldn't communicate. And,
we shouldn't feel bad, because those are normal symptoms from anyone who listens to this show too much. No, I mean kind of.
No, but it was really, it happened in the summer, and I spoke to a couple of my friends, and they think, oh, you know, they told me, oh, you can't die in your dream, or you're not going to come back. And I said, honest to God, you know, I wouldn't be making this kind of thing up. It really happened, and I feel...
Well, you say something very curious to me in that you refer to it as a dream. I've had many people who I have known that have had the near-death experience or the out-of-body experience, and it is a far cry difference than a dream.
If I can mention something to her.
I should hope so. You're the expert.
Some dreams, you can dream. Let's just start with a basic dream. You can have a dream, and you wake up in the morning, and you recall what you dreamt. That would be the bottom level here. The level above this would be during the middle of a dream, you're totally aware that it is a dream. This is a lucid dream, and in the middle of this dream, you know indeed that you're dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
This would be a second level. You can take this, however, one step further, where in the middle of the lucid dream, you totally become aware that it's no longer a lucid dream, but in fact, the entire environment around you and everything in the dream is now suddenly very real, just like as real as the physical world is to here today with us. And so that is probably, it could be, what you were experiencing. And then you wake up in the morning and you are, my goodness, this is so real. I just know I was there. And so it is possible to have an out-of-body experience during the dream state, and this frequently happens when a person wakes up in the morning and they say, dreams so much more significant than others. So,
how long do they remember those dreams?
Sometimes their entire life.
Yeah, this dream, I'll never forget it. Usually, you know, I've had dreams, and, you know, I can recall certain points of my dream, but this thing is so vivid in my mind that there is no way I could ever forget it. The only thing, I wasn't afraid of.
Can we say it was really a dream?
Pardon me? Well, I didn't die.
Can we say it was really a dream, or maybe you were out of body?
I don't know.
You were asleep when the physical body was asleep.
Yes,
while
I was asleep. Yes.
And during the dream, did you know that you were totally conscious in the middle of this?
In the dream, I didn't understand the situation I was in. You know, I was by this water tower, and this person came up with a rifle, and I couldn't see his face because it was like a hat or something. And I remember him pointing a gun, and I'm thinking, you know, oh, this is serious. So I immediately jumped down to the ground. But, you know, it didn't protect me. I still felt getting shot.
But you're okay now.
Oh, yeah. I'm living.
That's right.
Did you learn anything that you would call positive that
has been very, very helpful to you
and improve the quality of your spiritual and mental life?
Oh, well, I'm not afraid of death at all.
That's good.
Were you before the experience, that dream?
Well, you know, I really didn't understand it. I mean, never really. It came close to dying, so I really couldn't say. I just didn't want to die, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But now, if I died, I'm not scared of it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel very comfortable. But the only thing I didn't like, I hope if I do die, people will know who I am, or, you know, these people who were with me didn't know who at all I was. And
that sort of depends on you, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I was trying to be friendly.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much for sharing that with us.
Oh, thank you.
And
one other thing. Is there a way possible, maybe I could be hypnotized and find out? I think this happened, like, during World War II time.
Well, I don't know, Diane.
Now you're maybe talking about regression.
Yeah.
And some people do find out things during that. I can't necessarily say that that's the way for you to go. You have to look within and decide that for yourself.
I see.
You know, there are many psychics who say that they can just look at you and your aura, or read you, and can give you a pretty good sketch of your past lives.
I see.
It's very difficult, however, to relate to the accuracy of that.
I know.
That it becomes, you know, a very interesting story. But one of the interesting things that I find about the work of Dr. Frank Baranowski is that he doesn't believe anything anybody says to him
under
regression. However, that doesn't mean he doesn't investigate, and that the investigators don't go into the old records, into the old tax records, into writings and books, and seeing if these places and people which were related to and under that state didn't actually exist. Now, when they do exist, and he has over 4,000 such cases now.
Those are harder to explain.
We're talking now about the fact that we have a consistent thing that's coming up which violates the way most of us think. The chances of You being able to hypnotize me or me being able to hypnotize you, and I start telling you all about another life, and I give you facts and addresses and telephone numbers and whatever may be the case, or speak in a language that I don't know how to speak and speak it perfectly. Then, when that is verified, that those people did exist and that language did exist and they were speaking a great deal of accuracy about that time period as far as we understand history, but you got to understand history is always reconstructed history. There's no such thing as pure history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the losers of a war never write about it, so the only accounting you get is from the winners of the war. Right?
Yeah,
so we know that history is, at best, askew.
Mm-hmm.
But from the best we can tell, then we have to start investigating those things very carefully.
Mm. Well, thank you so much, and good night.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Good night. Glad that you joined us. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me is Diane Morrissey. It's Open Mind.
Monica.
Hello, Monica.
First-time caller, and I'm a little nervous.
Don't be nervous. Unless you're out of body, and you shouldn't be on the phone.
Well, I like to share my experience that happened to me. And this was a couple of years back. And it was, I was asleep. And I felt my body go, I felt like my body go out of me. And I was about in the ceiling, and I could see myself, but the feeling was such a peaceful feeling. But I had to make a choice whether to just let my body float away, and I knew it was death, or come back into my body, because I still had children that I was responsible for. To take care of.
Well, when you said you had a choice, did someone say, you know, go A or B? Or was it awareness of your own?
Oh, an awareness of my own. It was more an awareness of my own. It was like a best way, you know, it was an awareness of my own of what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Either to come back into my body because of my children.
That was your sole reason?
Yes. That was the reason I came back. But I had a if I didn't, I knew I was going to die.
What's your name, hon?
Monica.
Monica?
Yes.
Diane?
Monica, I'd like to tell you that that's really common. And if you indeed had a slight near-death experience at that moment or was out of body for just a minute or two, many people who have that happen to them and they're floating at the ceiling, they find that choice is the ultimate moment in the experience, that they have to decide, and the decision comes from within the spirit or the soul or the astral body or whatever this is that is outside of the physical. And I myself also had to make that choice.
Yes.
And I made it because I didn't have children. I made it because I wanted to touch something. And I can't tell you why, but I just know that every time I share that near-death experience and people's lives change because now suddenly they feel as I do, they catch a little from me, that death is no longer a frightening aspect of their life, but something that's going to be a natural transition and something easy to experience, not difficult. And that's the most important gift possibly that a near-death experiencer can pass on, is to share how marvelous it is and how wonderful.
Exactly, because I didn't, you know, like I've heard people say they just all of a sudden fall into their body or something like that. But mine was very, very smooth.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened to me about two, three times.
Do you?
In that same night.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband.
You're really rubbing it in the ground here, you know, Monica.
Do you remember how you re-entered the physical body?
I just, like, floated right into it.
Uh-huh, so all parts merged with all parts sort of simultaneously?
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh. You know, you girls are making me feel like a reformed drunk in a bar and I can't touch a thing.
When I re-entered the physical body, I dove into the back of my head. And that happens for about, you know, several people, 10 to 12% of the near-death experiencers sometimes dive into the back of the head.
Oh, no, I just floated back in, and the next day, you know, it, like you say, it's something that you'll never forget.
Right, and
I'll never forget it in my life.
As you look back on the experience, during the experience, when you were at the ceiling, was it a positive experience? Did you feel marvelous while you were out?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Oh, definitely.
And this is, again,
definitely,
quite common. When one gets back to the physical body, that's when the trauma sets in. Oh, my goodness, what happened to me? How could I explain this? How could I be out of my body? I must have been dead.
All right, you've got to go through, you know, physical life is really kind of a downer compared to life without it. But there is a very profound reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
Which we will get into, oh, in the next hour a little bit. There are some things to be said about that. Monica, thank you very much for sharing that with us, okay?
Okay, and thank you. We really enjoy your show, too, Bill.
All right, well,
we listen to you every Saturday.
It's you guys that make the show. You see what you did? You got us into a deep train of thought, and that's what it's all about.
Okay, thank you, and good night, both of you.
I'm Bill Jenkins. Be right back. And before the near-death experience, now I know a lot of times we don't plan a death experience exactly, but what are some of the things to be looking for?
Well, for a near-death experience, a person is usually close to death, and the physical body is most likely in some kind of physical danger, not from another person necessarily, just its vital signs are in danger, and it can sometimes happen in severe stress. But the out-of-body experience has some very unusual side effects before it takes place. I was hoping you'd ask me about that.
Well, I just told Diane if there was a question she was hoping I would ask, and I wasn't asking it, just to assume that I'm not smart enough to do that. So, Diane, this question that I was supposed to ask, and I forgot. What is it?
It's what is happening to the physical body just before one has an out-of-body experience.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Did I? How marvelous. Okay. Sometimes the person experiences a very quick, sudden, tremendous jerk to the physical body, so much so that it feels as if you're almost like walking on the edge of a curb, and just as you're about to drift off to sleep, your leg kind of slips off the curb, and you just jerk, the whole body shakes, and you find yourself suddenly awake. And this is because you've already been out of your body, and you've returned only because it happened so quickly.
Now
you don't recall it.
That does happen to me quite often.
And if you would just wake up right then, Bill, discover you're out.
It's sometime embarrassing. And sometime Evelyn will say, is everything okay? Because it's such a jolt, it'll wake her up. It should, because, you know, I just jump 4 feet off the bed, you know.
But not always does the person next to you acknowledge that you moved. And I would say it's close to 70-80% of the time, if the people out there, when this jerking sensation is happening to the body and they ask the person next to them, hey, did I move just now? The person will turn around and say, hey, I've been reading my book here. I'm wide awake and I can tell you the bed didn't move. You didn't move. The blankets didn't move. And this is because the astral body was coming back to the physical and they feel the sensation that the entire...
Everything moved.
Yes, and it didn't. The astral body is what moved.
In other words, you didn't make a good landing.
Possibly. Maybe you overshot it and went through the bed.
I make a bunch of bad landings, if that's what I'm having. Because, no, sometimes Evelyn even, you know, thinks that I'm getting spastic class every now and then. I calm her down. And
this could get strange,
this is
Bill.
This is the show, so I've got to slow that down just a little bit. Oh, my. I hope you're having as good a time as we are. Diane Morrissey is with me. Diane is the regional coordinator for the International Association of Near-Death Studies. Hello?
Hello, Bill?
Yeah, you're on.
This is Barbara. I want to say hello to Diane. And I was sitting here smiling every time she was explaining something because that's exactly what happened.
Barbara, did this happen to you?
The greatest gift I've had in this life was the gift of death.
It's true. Don't we live a lot more after it happens?
Oh, it is absolutely unbelievable.
You had a near-death experience?
I most certainly did.
Have you ever talked about this before?
Oh, I have, and I have written a book, and it's in process of being edited right now.
Well, best of luck with the book.
Thank you very much. It isn't particularly on that. It's on the path that it led me to afterwards, but I'm not here to talk about that.
I'm really fascinated about that particular aspect. You know, it's one thing to have this delightful experience, hopefully. But it's another thing to come back, learn from that, and improve the quality of not only your own life, but hopefully the lives of those around you.
One of the things that happens is it gives you, as Diane said, the feeling I have gotten from the time. What happened to me, Diane, so that you know, is, you know, as you know, or any of us who have experienced this, you're standing in this almost ethereal but powerful white light. Would you say that's a correct definition?
Oh, yes.
And it's almost like a magnet. You're dying to walk into this white light, and yet something keeps you standing there. And while I was standing there, as I always say, whatever your beliefs happen to be is okay. I always say there that I had a therapy session with God or a higher force. And this happens just by thought transference, and all these things are said to you.
It is true. It's overwhelming.
You don't know how they're said to you. It's like a thought transference. You don't hear a voice, and yet the words are there, or the thought pattern is there.
And all at the same time, huh?
Right. And I was told, Barbara, I'm going to take everything away from you. Absolutely everything you have will be taken away from you, and you're going back, and I'm going to close all doors on you, but I will open better doors for you. And I said, okay, and I didn't even think anything of it. And the next thing I knew, I was in ICU, intensive care. I had been there for 4 days, hooked up to all kinds of machinery. And I looked up and opened my eyes, bouncing back from Netherland, and just knew everything was just going to be fine.
Right.
And directly after that, within, you know, a short time after that, it was like all my vital signs, everything, and this was all touch and go for 3.5 days, just went, you know, just came right back, was miraculous, and I was immediately sent down to my room.
Well, did you have some things taken away from you afterwards?
Everything, Bill. My condo, my car, all my money, all my stocks, all my bonds, my business, you name it.
Everything was taken away?
Absolutely everything.
Did new doors open up?
Well, now that's... That's a moot point. I'm still... The
sometimes
doors,
it takes time.
Yes, no, there were many doors open. What you said...
You know, what we have to do is run, huh? Because the big hand is on 12, as my engineer tells me, and the little hand is on 11.
Okay.
Which means we have to run. But thank you very much. Oh, this is such a fun time for so many on a Saturday night, and... The, you know, we're talking about the near-death experience, and that has some sort of a negative connotation in so many minds. But if you've been with us for these first 2 hours, you find out that that's really not all that bad. Perhaps we have the wrong view. And my guest is Diane Morrissey of the International Association of Near-Death Studies from Connecticut University. She's the regional director here, serving, Southern California, the western part of the United States area. A great deal of study has gone into that. A great deal of people have a conception. I want to say misconception, but I'll not make that editorial judgment. I'll just say a conception about death that is enormously negative. And I must admit, Diana, although I realize that in my own belief system that reincarnation is a process of life, that we will go through this, that it isn't all that bad, but at this point in time, I'm certainly not looking forward to death.
Well, I can tell you sometimes I do look forward, only because I have a feeling or an inkling what could happen. And most people who survive a near-death experience, those who don't, and Dr. Ring just says he doesn't get the questionnaires back.
I suppose that...
But those who do say it's...
The Postal Service doesn't get that far.
Those who do say it's just marvelous, and... We certainly change, not only our lives are transformed to want to live better, closer to the universe, care more about what happens around us, about other people, to love more, to feel more, all of that, and not to be afraid of death on the other side.
You know, I get criticized every now and then. I don't mind that, because we talk about this, and it's, if I can paraphrase, it's Bill, you talk in such glowing terms about death. if everybody felt the way you did, then no one would... And then they get into a hard time saying, be afraid of dying. And as if the fear of death is to be the great motivator for you to do the right things in life.
I think if more people studied and or talked about death and dying, they would live much better lives. It's not because you avoid the subject that you live better. It's because you acknowledge that there could be an end to it all.
Well, I also question the fear of death being the motivator to do anything.
Well, I don't think that's a reason, but I do believe before my near-death experience that I didn't think about death at all.
Right.
Because I basically probably feared it, so it was something I never thought about.
It'll just happen one day.
Not to me.
Yeah. No, it's not going to happen to you.
That's right.
But it gets into that question of motivation. If we are motivated out of fear... to do the right thing.
That's the wrong thing.
That's the wrong motivation.
Absolutely.
We haven't made any progress.
That's correct.
And we are still rather primitive, animalistic, Neanderthal.
Mm-hmm.
If our motivations then for doing the right things come from a much higher level, now you're doing right things. But to be fearful and to do things out of fear, now this doesn't mean that I'm going to go and deliberately stand in front of a racing, you know, freight train. That's not doing something out of fear. That's doing something out of stupidity.
Correct.
Or the desire to end your own life, which is probably not a good idea in most cases.
That's true also.
I just wanted to touch on those. What are some of the other questions that I haven't asked that should have to be?
Some other effects that can happen to the physical body before one gets out.
Yes.
And they are where you might feel that the bed is shaking under you, that there's an earthquake, and you jump out of bed and you look at the chandelier or something around you, and you go, wow, that's not moving.
I've experienced that 3 or 4 times.
Yes.
But it turned out to be my dog, Brandy, scratching.
I know. Mine's this Penny and Tuffy. And they do that too. But it frequently is the vibrations in the astral body that reverberate and transfer to the physical, and you feel like there's an earthquake or the body shakes tremendously, and after this you can find and discover that you are out of your body. Another thing that can happen...
Is this one of those cases too, like the jumping back in, where if someone were with you, and quite often that happens... though you've had the sensation of this great shaking, like when you come back in, or like you just, the vibrating, the person next to you, who may have been observing you during this period, may not be aware of it?
That's correct. That's
okay.
Correct. And that's why it's important to ask the person next to you, did I move? Did you notice that my body suddenly jerked? Or did you see that my body was shaking quite violently right then? And when they say no, how do you explain that? And if you pay attention to those times before you sleep, you can experience that you are indeed half in or half out or all the way out of the body. But if you're not paying attention to it, they go by unnoticed and you aren't aware of it. Another thing happens that we mentioned briefly earlier was the paralysis that can happen to the body. And understand this is not a permanent paralysis, but just something temporary if you're only half in or half out. And the totally physical body, you know you're awake, you've been sleeping in the middle of the night, and you wake up, and you find that you can't open your eyes. As hard as you try, you can't open your eyes, you can't move your hands, you can't move your legs. And the best way, if you have this happen to you, I know from personal experience, is don't try to open the eyes. That doesn't work. The best thing to do is just simply try to move your little fingers, and you'll notice that the jerk happens right after this. The body will jerk quite suddenly, and you'll be wide awake.
What's the most interesting place you've traveled to in the out-of-body state?
Probably to another galaxy and experience sort of a oneness with that. And
with that or them? Were there other?
Well, there are other people, but I don't always meet other people. But I think that a good thing for astral projection and out-of-body experience to take place, if one could research this, and certainly we are doing this across the country, is to... possibly pursue the search of missing persons. If one is out of body, there is no time there. It is possible to see past as well as future. It would therefore be possible to look for a missing person. Also, probably to solve crimes.
Certainly, it could be useful in crime prevention or...
True.
Well, if you can solve a crime in this fashion, of course...
Yes.
The judges and the courts are going to look at you and say...
That's true.
Get off my back.
But times do change.
In talking to Bob Monroe, the explorers, when they go back into the past, found that they could, they have not yet ever done that, but they could affect...
A future event.
A future event.
Absolutely.
And I asked him, I said, well, if you were in the out-of-body state, that's a different realm. You know, if you can pinch somebody's cheek and they won't feel you, I mean, how can you affect, if you were around, let's say, a young Adolf Hitler, how could you affect that in the out-of-body state?
Well, I do believe that everything's happening at the same moment. This is my personal belief, that there isn't any time. If for a person who has a near-death experience... And these people come back and share, wow, it was so interesting. There wasn't any time on the other side. And when they wake up, they're suddenly aware that time is back with them. And wow, everything happened at the same moment. If this is truly taking place during a near-death experience, my concept of it, and it's just a personal one for me, is that there isn't any time. That things do happen simultaneously all around us, both the past and the future. And this is just a personal belief of mine because of my near-death experience and then watching the out-of-body state and being aware that I could contact past times as well as future ones while I was out-of-body.
Well, when you're in the past, you know, kind of get back to that question, how could you affect an event in the past, which, of course, would have an effect on our present?
It would be possible to see a past event and see... or even a future one, and see how something is going to turn out. Mm-hmm. And then when you find yourself in that particular situation, and this has happened to me, that you are able to better handle it emotionally, physically, and consciously because you have an awareness of how it was going to be. And now you're in the experience. It is not deja vu. It's much bigger than that. And you go, wow, I saw this 2 nights ago while I was out of body, and now it is happening. And I remember during the out-of-body that it wasn't going quite as well as I wanted it to. Now you can suddenly change your consciousness and say, hey, this needs to be done in order to have a more effective life or a more effective response.
Well, and when you're looking into the future, then you're looking into a whole series of probabilities.
Correct.
When you're looking into the past, though, those probabilities have come into place and have happened and are more or less, like we would say, cast in stone, or is that so?
I don't know. I don't have any answers. I'm not sure about anything. Mm-hmm. But I do know that it is possible to be out of one's body, and an out-of-body is not a near-death experience, but there are tremendous similarities between the two.
Okay, let's go to our callers and see what's on their mind. I don't know your name, so give me your first name and what's on your mind. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
Yes. I always had the feeling that I was another person before I was born, and I was wondering if anything you've seen among these people who've had these experiences would tend to cast aside all these the sayings that that's a person's imagination.
Mm-hmm. Well, that question you're asking is a very difficult one to answer. I'm not sure that I can. I don't have the knowledge within me. I didn't have your experience.
Mm-hmm.
I just know that most people who have near-death experiences don't say that they feel a past life. However, some do. Some feel that during that sequence they remember other lives. It isn't true with everyone. For me, I just felt this one.
I never had a near-death experience. I never almost died. Never did. It's just a feeling I've had just as a living person.
I've had many people in my classes who've come up and told me, Diane, you know, since I've heard you share or whatever, I just feel so comfortable because I've always known that I've been here, even before I was born. And I just tell them I'm sure that's right because it's very hard to conflict someone's opinion about their self.
But do you have an awareness of a previous life or a previous circumstance?
Yeah, it's just a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing real concrete that you could write down about? Like names, addresses, telephone numbers, and places like that?
Oh, not really.
Yeah?
Not really.
I don't know why we get these feelings.
It's just vague, you know, just very vague.
A lot of people have them, so I would say don't be concerned about that.
Well, I just wonder if it's true or not. Another thing, I wanted to say one more thing real quick. You know, so many people have had this out-of-body experience.
Some of us haven't.
Oh. And I wonder, I believe that there is such a thing because it happens so often, but when people talk about traveling to Mars and seeing green monsters and things like this that some people do, and going back to the year 1846 and so forth,
That's just local traffic. They go further than that.
Oh, I don't see that there's going to be such a thing as time. How do you tell the difference between a real experience and paranoid schizophrenia?
Good question.
I'm not a psychologist. I don't know that I can answer your question. But I would say, if you ask maybe a schizophrenic person in the daytime, how are they, maybe they have a problem with that. In other words, they're not, as I understand it, they have a hard time relating in the physical life, not just in the hallucinatory life. So with a person who has had an out-of-body experience, they're aware that that's totally real. But in their waking physical life, they are responsible human beings that have a job, and they're average, ordinary people. And these things are happening to them, and they can't understand them because nobody talks about it.
You know, I can give you a story, and I think it's one of the gauges you can go by. Because you can hear a lot of stories, and people do have imaginations. And sometimes they just like to shoot the bull, as far as that goes. And a couple of years ago, my older brother was visiting me. Now, he's from Texas, and we don't have anything down like that in Texas, as you know. But when he got here to California, and he was spending a couple of weeks with his little brother and found out all the things that little brother was in, he had to admit a story to me. He was very unhappy with his wife and with the kids one night, and he sort of laid down on the living room floor with his head propped up against the couch watching television. And the next thing he knew, he was floating above his body, which, of course, immediately made me angry. Here my big brother is doing this, and I can't even do it. Floated up into the attic of the house and saw that there were some frayed wires up there. And he works for the Texas Power and Light Company, where they make the electricity, and he had never really been up in the attic of the house. Floated on out into the street. Floated on down to the control room of the generating plant where he generally works, and sat and listened to the conversation of his buddies there for a long time, and casually floated back home. That happened. We know that's just not imagination. We're getting some empirical reporting of an event that happened that can be confirmed. See what I mean?
Yes. Can I ask one more question, and then I'll hang up and listen to you on the air?
Sure.
Wally George is yelling about capital punishment in the next room. I kind of wonder...
Wally George is always yelling about it.
If we go to such a nice place, I mean, I'm just curious, if we go to such a wonderful place, I wonder what happens to these criminals that die in the electric chair and gas chamber. Are we not punishing them at all? Where do they go, I wonder?
I can't answer your question. I'm not sure because I wasn't a criminal before that happened to me. And maybe if I had been, I might know that answer.
Okay, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, but that, you know, that always puts an interesting touch on it, capital punishment. Do we have the right to snuff out somebody's life? And also, do we have a right to let them continue to go around snuffing out other people's lives? This is probably a personal problem about their own situation. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind.
This is Laura.
Hi, Laura.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Diane.
Hello.
First-time caller, but not a first-time listener.
Oh, thank you.
I had a near-death experience the end of May this year,
mm-hmm.
which was very much like what everybody's been talking about. I was in the market, and I had a severe angina attack, so I walked over to the manager, told him there was a place I could sit. He got me a chair and said he was going to call the paramedics. And then after he called them, he sat down and he held my hand. And suddenly I wasn't there anymore. I was floating in a void, a dark void. Now I realize it was a tunnel, because I was floating in a position like I was swimming in a dead man's float.
Okay.
And in front of me was light, and I realized the light was coming from two little angels, and they were floating too in front of me, and they had the white floating gowns that was causing the light. But in front of them was a bright light, and it seemed as if They related me towards the bright light. Now, I could hear at a distance, but I could not feel. And I heard the paramedics say, she has no pulse, she has no blood pressure. But nothing bothered me. I was peaceful, content, serene, and it's as if there was nothing in the world but happiness and wonderful feeling. And when I opened my eyes, I was in the ambulance, and the paramedic was looking down at me, and he had a great big grin on his face, and his whole face was lit up. And I looked at him because he was happy, like, thank God she's alive. And I looked at him, I smiled, said thanks, and I started to go back where I was because I wanted to go back.
Mm-hmm. And, many people don't want to come back.
And he gave me a shot of...
Listen, if you can backstroke all day long, that's not bad.
Well, it was a French stroke, like a dead man's float. And he gave me a real strong shot of oxygen that opened my eyes, and I started coughing. I said, boy, I says, that was real strong. He says, oh, I must have turned it on too high. And he says, now I'm going to give you a shot. And I closed my eyes again, and I got another whiff of that. And it was like smelling horseradish, fresh horseradish that would clean out your sinuses.
No, that sent me back to the other side.
Yeah, and I said to him, boy, that was strong. He says, well, I must have given you too much oxygen again. He said, I got to, I'll turn it back. And then the other man was talking, I was aware then that the other paramedic was talking on a radio, two-way radio. And the man on the other side was at a hospital. And the person at the other side, the doctor, said, if her blood pressure goes below a certain thing, I don't remember what it was, give her a certain kind of shot. He says, oh, she's alert now. Mm-hmm. And they kept talking. Well, the paramedic who was taking care of me kept talking and talking. He would not shut up. And everything that he said to me needed an answer from me. And it was the paramedic who brought me through.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, too, now that paramedics, because they're so aware of the near-death experience that people can be brought back, they spend time when they're trying to get the heart started again, telling the patient, come on, you can come back, come on. And they do this, and quite often, sometimes that encourages the person during the near-death experience to actually return.
And I didn't hear anything that they said, though.
Oh, it is possible. Many people do indeed experience everything that's happening while the paramedics are trying to wake them up. And I'd like to comment, too, on your angels. Emanuel Swedenborg is a man who, in the 17th century, wrote about being out of body, and he frequently saw angels, so you're not alone.
But I was not out of body.
Oh, well, a near-death experience, whatever.
Yeah,
well, you were floating in that void with the angels. That was out of body. You weren't doing that with your body.
Oh, no, something was doing it.
Right, your consciousness. That's the part we're talking about, was away from the physical body.
But it was such a beautiful experience,
uh-huh.
And I did want to go back.
Oh, I know.
Well, I thank you very much for sharing that beautiful experience with us.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
My pleasure. And who we have here now?
Hello.
Hello there.
Diane, this is Joanne, and hi, Bill.
Hello, Joanne.
I'm in your Tuesday night Cerritos College class.
Oh, hello, Joanne.
Hi. I hesitate to talk to you after class because Diane put so much time and energy into the class, and I don't want to keep her afterwards, but I wanted to relate this out-of-body, which was not near death.
Okay.
I started to tell it in class but didn't finish it. It occurred while I was at work and in a kind of just a deep thought state, not automatically doing my work and wondering about my life. And all of a sudden, instantaneously, I was transported to outer space. And I saw the Earth in such vivid color. And
what color was it around Los Angeles?
Yeah, I didn't see any smog.
Hmm.
The vantage point was like being on another planet or being in the middle of space and just seeing the whole Earth. And at the same time, seeing all the peoples of the Earth, and their hands were joined. Every race, color, and creed. And on top of the Earth was a very, very bright light in the form of a cross. And the message without words was, be at peace. Everything is happening according to plan, but there is a chain reaction going on in the world. and instantaneously again, it was a vision like I saw without my eyes.
Right.
And when I was back at work, I looked around to see if anyone noticed I was gone, which of course they didn't. And the strangest thing was I was not totally odd. It was like, oh, I always knew something like this could happen. I had heard stories of the saints, et cetera, but it wasn't like I knew I couldn't tell anybody, which felt strange. Because
I'm glad you got out of the closet there.
I know it. Even in class, I hesitated, but...
You know, Diane, I think it's interesting, and Joanne, too, as we relate these experiences, I get a chance to talk to many people from all walks of life, and there is a symbolism about our own belief systems that seems to stick out in them. Like you said, that above the earth was the cross.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's certainly a very strong piece of symbolism within the Judeo-Christian culture.
Mm-hmm.
But people who are from India or from another culture altogether will have a similar kind of sense that you will, of viewing the earth at one time, but their symbol won't be the cross.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be something else.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very, very interesting to me, how we filter these things through our own thought processes and our belief systems.
That's true with the out-of-body, but what's interesting with near-death experiences is it's almost universal, even for people who are agnostic or atheistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are.
In their background, they still have encounters with the white light and feel this overwhelming love and presence. So the NDE, the near-death experience, does have some overwhelming characteristics that unite all people who've had it.
Right.
I feel very much at home in your class.
Oh, thank you, Joanne.
And how would I go about, say, doing... I would like to work in the field someday.
Well, just keep looking. Find a place for yourself.
Do they pay well over there on the other side?
Well, when you encounter experiences like that, was just one. There's been many.
Oh, lovely.
I wonder, like Diane says, these things are happening for a reason. And I would like to find out that reason.
Just keep looking.
Well, I think it's important that you do. And only you are going to find that thing.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm. Thank you both.
All right, Joanne.
Bye,
Thank
Dad.
You very much. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me is Diane Morrissey. We're talking to be in one of your classes, Diane Morrissey. How would I do it?
Well, you can simply call the colleges that I teach at, and I'll name them alphabetically.
Okay.
It's an ongoing program in ESP, parapsychology, clairvoyance, astral projection, etc.
All the good stuff.
Yes, uh-huh. And I teach at currently at Cerritos College in Norwalk, Chaffey College in Alta Loma, Coastline College in Fountain Valley, Fullerton College in Fullerton, Long Beach City College, Mount San Antonio College in Walnut, Orange Coast College in Costa Mesa, Rio Hondo College in Whittier, Riverside City College, Sacramento College, Saddleback College in Mission Viejo, San Diego, at Grossmont College, and Santa Monica College.
And she puts about 150,000 miles a year on her car. My goodness.
Or fly there, one of the
yeah.
two. I wish I could do all of those astrally.
That was my next suggestion, you know. We're taking a group of Open Mind listeners to London in May. We were going to do it in October.
Mm-hmm.
But I got busy and with things and we couldn't go. So we'll go in May. And we're all supposed to get airline tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
could be much cheaper,
if we
Bill.
Work this out just right,
yes.
We can forego Air Caledonia.
Yes.
That's what Ken and Bob accused me about.
Of course, you probably wouldn't be able to eat or enjoy any kind of drink and be merry because you can't do that while you're out.
You know, that's a point I hadn't thought about. Cancel the astro projectile thing. You know, that I'll go ahead and pay the airline ticket. There's something. Well, I don't know. What do they do on the other side for fun?
Well, there's so much love. You don't really look for things for fun. It's simply the love is all the experience one needs to have.
Not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. Instead, we're going to go to a caller here. Who do we have on?
I think it's me.
I think so.
Barbara.
Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Bill.
How are you?
Hi, Diane.
Hello.
We have met at Dr. Moss's a couple of times.
Oh, we have. Okay.
Yeah.
You and Thelma been getting it on, have you?
Not lately, no. Oh.
She
okay.
is such a delight.
Diane and I had made some plans once, though, and they fell through. We stood in the parking lot, and we talked about trying to move objects. Do you remember?
Well, refresh my memory. Are you the lady that bends spoons?
Yes.
I recall. I remember Thelma's introduction of the two of us. It was quite humorous.
Yes, it was funny.
You've been spooned. You probably go out about aim.
I also break crystal.
And break crystal. Really rubbing it in tonight, aren't you? No.
That upset me.
Yeah.
That upset me. It's my favorite piece of crystal.
Well, be careful with your mind.
Yeah, I will. But I was wondering, have you tried to move things, Diane?
I have, and I found a little success here, but it's just not something that I've pursued in the physical body. I would love to do it in the astral body. That would mean much more to me.
Well, whenever she said moving things, I, in my mind, came up, when you're in the out-of-body state, are you able to move things around?
That I can't do. I tried one night when I visited Thelma. I tried to knock her water glass over.
But see, some people can move things.
And I can't do it.
Yeah. Well, nobody can do this field all the time. In the paranormal field, all things don't happen all the time. If you think you do, then I think you have a problem.
Yeah, but you're right. The near-death experience opens you up to so many other kinds of things.
It does.
Did you ever have a near-death experience?
Yes, quite a strong one. I was 19. I came home from college for the weekend on a Saturday, and I had pneumonia. And the next thing I knew, it was Wednesday. And I spent 4 days on a pink cloud over my mother's bed.
On a pink cloud?
Yeah, it was lovely. It was like walking around in a trampoline. It was bright and airy and soft. And I watched everything they did, how they took care of me, who came in, who came out. I was absolutely right about it all.
Mm-hmm.
And
you were able to confirm that afterwards, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You
yeah.
didn't keep it to yourself. You asked about things.
Well, you know, I was 19. I thought I was hallucinating. So you did tell.
Right.
And my mother and father and the doctor, they were all just shocked. Of course, nobody talked about those things. It was a long time ago.
Well, we hope that people will start talking about them more. That's one of the reasons that Diane is here.
That's
it's
right.
called get out of the closet time.
Right, and share your near-death experiences and out-of-body. So everyone who has had them that are afraid to share will become more open and realize that they're just like everyone else who's had one.
And also important is that there is a great deal to be learned about living this life out of that you can share with other people.
Yes, and that lack of fear is so very important.
It is.
That, I think, is the biggest thing of all. It's also led, I've had a lot of losses. It's led me to be able to go back and forth. I can now visit.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Many people have had one near-death experience, having had never a near-death experience or out-of-body before it, suddenly experienced that they can now travel out-of-body. I can't answer why that takes place. We don't know.
Oh, I think this finally realizing, breaking down the left side of the brain.
That could be, but IANs can't really say that they have an answer why that takes place.
Well, that's right. You don't have any
concrete
evidence. You just got now a medical belief, if you want to look at it that way.
For sure.
Well, I lost a child, and it's as though he came to me. And that opened the visiting.
Mm-hmm.
So you just visit all around?
Yeah. I've been to some interesting places.
One of these days, you know, if the INS people are listening to this show, they're going to figure out a way to have visas to do this. You know how bureaucrats are.
I don't think that'll ever happen.
They'll try to regulate it.
Are you still planning on going to Stonehenge?
Yes, we are. We're going in May.
You definitely are.
That's the word I have now.
Well, then I've got to try to do that because I've been there several times.
Well, we want you along.
And there are things I want to see if they're true.
Okay.
And I'm glad you called Barbara and shared again with me.
Should we try sometime?
Sure.
Okay.
All right.
We'll see you. I'm Bill Jenkins with Diane Morrissey. We're talking about the near-death experience. Become a part of your group. Is there any way to join the association or to get mailings from the association or to see you or whatever?
They can find out either about the classes or about the International Association for Near-Death Studies by writing me at Diane Morrissey at Post Office Box 4241, Santa Fe Springs, California, 90670, and please enclose a self-addressed stamped envelope.
And I am sure that they will get that information back to you perhaps a little bit faster than I am getting information back to you that you asked me about. About a month ago, about things in the Bible divisible by seven. We have been renovating the newsroom. I've had guests in all over, and I just haven't got around to doing all of it yet.
But he'll do it.
I'll do it. But, Diane, you'll be faster on that, I hope.
Well, I'll get my little computer going.
Get it going. You're on Open Mind tonight. Who are we talking to?
Hi, Bill.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Diane?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Oh, this is great. This has been a good day.
Okay.
I have some questions. Diane, whoever accused you of being busy, the first question I wanted to ask you was if you came when you came back from this experience, if you had any new thoughts or ideas or new feelings about suicide and the victims of suicide.
I do.
If you encountered victims of suicide.
No, I didn't during the experience. I've talked to a few people, though, who had tried to kill themselves. In one instance, a lady who had taken enough barbiturates, they said, to kill about 20 men, and they pulled her through that, and she was forced to see in her past life review a future review of what would have happened had she stayed alive. And it caused in her, not anguish, that's the wrong word, but a tremendous desire to again stay alive so she could create that and make it happen. So I am aware that with suicide victims, and again, it's not a victim because they are brought back,
right,
that some very unusual things happen. And,
but you didn't encounter any souls yourself?
No, I did meet a woman on the other side, and I was totally aware that she not only knew everything about my past, my future, everything I'd ever thought and said to another human being, and was the most loving presence I have ever felt in my life.
Did she transfer any information to you about how she felt about what had happened? Or did you get that far? Did you?
What had happened with what? I don't understand.
With the fact that she had committed suicide.
Oh, no. This is a woman I met during my near-death experience that helped me decide whether I would choose to stay where I was or return.
Oh, that was going
to
be one of my questions.
Uh-huh.
If you had had help in deciding whether or not, or was it your choice?
In my retrospection of the event, I really do believe that she aided that choice, but the choice was totally within me to make, that I could decide to stay there or I could decide to return.
And this person was the only person you encountered on that side?
That's true. And once I came to the white light, my experience was that I felt that presence was all loving and all knowledge, both past and future. Everything accumulated into that white light, and that indeed was for me God at that time.
And did you encounter anyone on that side, like this lady or this lady that you were talking about, that you could recognize and identify when you woke up or when you came to in this life? Or someone that you knew?
That question is multiple. I didn't see anyone on the other side. In other words, while I was dead, I didn't see anyone on the other side that I recognized. But when I returned, I was totally aware of my environment and everything that I had experienced and was quite cognizant of that fact.
And so what you're saying is that the person that you did come in contact with was pretty much a stranger to you. Even though it was loving, it was...
Tremendously loving. She knew more about me than anybody could ever know about me.
And when you traveled about, did you have any like position sense? Were you floating, walking, flying?
I did all of those things. In my house, I looked down at one point only to discover, I looked down to actually wonder why my feet weren't hurting. For the first time in my life, I was walking without pain. And I looked down at my legs to find out why, and I discovered I wasn't on the ground. I was about 6 inches off the ground.
Just floating along.
Yes, just kind of walking, but above the ground.
And in your consciousness, could you picture, did you have a position sense? Were you in a sitting position, or is that gone? Or is it gone for you?
When I was in my home, I knew exactly where I was. When I was going through the tunnel, I can't say whether I was...
No, I mean your physical position, like sitting or standing or...
Of the physical body?
Yeah.
The paramedics worked on me, and I was laying down the entire time. The physical body was laying down.
And when you were traveling through the tunnel, did you feel air or like a breeze or wind?
I felt a sensation of passing things or things passing me. I can't say that I felt any resistance at all during that passage.
Streamlined.
I'm sorry?
She was streamlined.
I was aware I was moving very quickly, but I didn't feel resistance like you would feel wind.
Did Did you move, you say quickly, did you move quickly, you mean coming back, or?
Both directions. Any time that I went through a tunnel, I felt it was extremely quickly.
That seems to be the general case, that the movement is extremely rapid.
It is. There were points in the house when I traveled through the walls and was cognizant of the fact that I moved through them and it was happening. I was watching it while it was taking place. Other times I had a simple desire. I wonder where my dog is, for instance, one time, and I instantly ended up outside, no time or space passing in between the two events. Just the desire caused me to be in a different place.
You kind of willed yourself from
absolutely
place to place.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. So both things happened to me.
Does that all that help you?
Can I press my luck? I have one more.
Well, I have a bunch of other calls.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Diane.
Right.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, hon. Good questions. Your whole series.
For sure.
I want to get to... Who do we have on the line here? Hello?
Hello?
Yeah. Can you hang on just a second?
Sure.
I want to do one little piece of business, and I want you to ask your questions of Diane, okay?
My name is Noel.
Hi, Noel.
I'm both a first-time caller and an ex-cynic.
Music to our ears, Noel.
I have thoroughly enjoyed the entire 3 hours tonight, and I have a couple quick questions. Diane, you mentioned throughout the show that most of the experiences, or all the experiences, have been pleasurable. Do you ever have research that this time is hell?
You mean our physical life?
No. During this time of leaving the body, with the tunnel and the pleasurable experience, do people have negative experience? Do they see, rather than a positive, they see a negative?
During a near-death experience, a few people have seen negative things, but again, they return to their body with a tremendous, overwhelming sense within themselves now to live a more positive life, to make things work for them so that their universe around them and themselves are now connected as one.
I wonder, in that line of, like we were talking about, the lady saw the cross, which
mm-hmm.
is an imagery of the Christian Judeo-Society,
mm-hmm.
whereas somebody from India may have seen some other symbol. If they experienced a negative or a hellish kind of place, could that not also be a reflection of where they spiritually are at that time, their spiritual nature, character, and personality?
It's hard to answer. I can't answer that. I was aware at the near-death experience of heaven and hell. I believed in both. I'm not sure now about that. I absolutely know for myself and many other near-death experiences that we do indeed survive death in some manner or fashion. What that manner or fashion is, it's hard to say.
Well, the cynicism that I was mentioning before came from, I'll say, the 50s Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to earlier, though, you mentioned fire and brimstone and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Catholicism of the 50s, where I'm from, New Jersey, was just that. And
the Church of Christ of any time, which is what I grew up
mm-hmm.
in.
And you die, you go to heaven, you go to hell, and you go to heaven only if you are without sin and what have you.
True.
It's as cut and dry as that.
This was also my background, and I can tell you that what I experienced was the most positive, loving thing that has ever happened to me, and I can't imagine that anything could ever happen as wonderful as that day in June of 77.
Do you feel, Diane, that this is for a chosen few or for the masses, that this is, that they are capable, we are capable of doing this?
Well, what's interesting is the people that it happens to, once they get over the skepticism of other people, they have the tremendous desire to want to share this with other people so that we can let them know about how marvelous it is on the other side.
And that's our message, Noel. Thank you very much. We're done. Diane Morrissey, you're going to have to come back, and we will pick up
thank
on this
you,
conversation.
I will.
It has been uplifting and delightful, and thank you so very, very much. Next week, Lee Elders will join me, and we'll go into great detail about the amazing experiences of Billy Meyer with his friends from the Pleiades Star Cluster. You'll enjoy that. We'll see you there.
Celebrations, 25.